Welcome to New York, I Love You, But You've Changed, a podcast where longtime New Yorkers from across the five boroughs give us their version of the city they love, discuss how it's evolved, and share their thoughts on what we can do to make the greatest hometown in the world great for all of us. Oh, and of course, there will be some hot takes on the music and movies that define NYC. I'm your host, Alexis Haught, a former teacher who lives, writes, and has opinions in Crown Heights.
This is our very first episode of New York, I Love You, But You've Changed. We wanted to give everyone a little glimpse of the team behind the pod. So I'm here. My name is Erin Bagley. I'm here with Alexis Haught. Say hi.
Hey.
We're sitting in the studio.
The studio is Erin's apartment in the lovely Crown Heights neighborhood of Brooklyn.
Lovely neighborhood. Studio looks a lot like a living room, but maybe as time goes on, we'll make some upgrades to it.
There yeah.
will be pop filters hanging from the ceiling.
And if you listen in our first episode, our first guest and I talk a lot about decorating ideas. Most of them have to do with taxidermy, wearing Tim's and fitted caps. But we'll save that. We'll save that.
I could be open to taxidermy.
I think there's plenty of space.
People might think I'm a lot older than I am, but maybe I'll just like make it cool again.
Not if we make it fresh. Yeah, so we just like wanted to take the opportunity to do a little bit of an episode as you dive into the interviews of who we are and why we're doing this. And we're going to talk in a second. Erin's going to introduce herself and talk about her role and just a couple things you should know about her.
Yeah, so my name's Erin Bagley. Full disclosure, I'm from California.
West Coast, baby.
Gotta disclaim that. Yeah, rep the West Coast. I moved here 5 years ago. I love New York. It's been one of the first places that I truly felt at home, and I do tend to have a bit of wanderlust, but New York was really, you know, when I got here the very first time, and I didn't even live here permanently at that point, I felt so comfortable and at ease, and maybe not everyone feels that way when they first get to New York, but I loved it. And here I am, and I've been
and you've
here ever
lived
since.
In three of the five boroughs, right?
I've lived in Manhattan when I first moved here. I actually was just going to stay with a couple of friends for a few weeks and ended up living with them for a year. So we were three women in a one bedroom.
Amazing.
Which I'm sure many people can commiserate with.
I'm nodding enthusiastically.
Yes. I lived in Queens and now I live in Crown Heights, Brooklyn.
Amazing.
And one thing that I've found over the last few years that maybe isn't popular opinion, but I love about New York, I actually really enjoy driving here. And maybe that also is a throwback to my California roots that...
Y'all know that car culture in LA is strong.
Yeah. You have to drive there. And I do love that you don't have to have a car in New York. That's a huge benefit, I think, on many levels, and I won't get into that. But that being said, I did have a car here for a few years, and I just... I'm an aggressive driver. Always
you
have been.
To be.
And yeah, and I've been driving since I was, 15? But in New York, everyone else drives the way I drive. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh my God, these are my people. I can like go with the speed of traffic. I can honk and people will honk back. I love it. I've almost been killed by a few city buses. But that being said.
Almost. As Brandy says, almost doesn't count.
Never been in an accident, knock on wood. But yeah, that's something that I just find to be truly not popular, but that's just my opinion.
I literally cannot imagine owning a car ever again for the rest of my life.
I like driving.
I respect
it's
that.
It's like, it's an adventure. Every
it's
time you get
beyond
on the BQE,
my, yeah.
Oh my God, you never know who's going to change eight lanes of traffic and cut you off to get off at an exit.
I've driven in the city many times and each time I'm like, nah, I'm good. This could be the last time.
Yeah, that's fair. We're going to flip the roles a little bit in this episode. Moving forward, our series includes a series of interviews that Alexis will be conducting. But in this case, I will be the interviewer. And I'm going to ask Alexis to give some background on herself, but also just give some background on why we wanted to create this series.
And Erin's like typical role is she's kind of a... a Jackie of all trades, if you will. She's up, like, doing all the sound checks and, like, listening while I'm doing the interviews, just figuring out the things, like, what we do to protect ourselves. And, yeah, and also, like, she provides both the studio space and the alcohol that goes along
with it. I'm also a bartender.
Right, absolutely. Like, it's a Saturday afternoon after a Tabata class, and we are sitting here grueling Tabata class, and we're sitting here drinking some white wine. It's incredible. But just a little bit about me. I'll save most of the biographical information for the actual interview. My name is Alexis Hott. I also live in Crown Heights, which is absolutely my favorite neighborhood that I've lived in New York, and maybe that I've ever lived in. Two things that you should know. I love pop culture to the point where I may invest a little too much in it, but one of my pop culture claims to fame is that in the December of 2016, I received an email of Spotify congratulating me for being in the top 1% of Drake fans.
Wow. And that's an accomplishment.
It's an accomplishment, but also, like, should I feel embarrassed?
No.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yes. Of course I'm sure.
Like, but who's my company in that top 1%, do you think?
Rihanna.
No. Rhee is not. No. Absolutely not.
Rhee, I mean, we're going beyond Spotify.
Rhee is not 1%. Spending all of her time. It's the other way around, actually. I would say Drake is probably Rihanna's top fan.
He's like top 0.0001%.
Right. But she's not sitting around, like, listening to all of his whining. Love you, Drake, but, like, there's a lot of whining.
So what you're saying is, Alexis, that you're the 1%?
Absolutely. And that's the only capacity in my life in which I can claim on the 1%. So that's one thing that you should know about me. And we'll leave it at that for now because, again, you have a lot of time to get to know me.
So, Alexis, tell us about this podcast. What is it? What are the goals of this podcast?
Yeah, so as you guys know, the podcast is called New York, I Love You, But You've Changed. Which is a great title that I workshopped with my friend Scott, who's one of my...
Shout out to Scott,
who's one of my really good friends who now has left us and jumped ship to Los Angeles, but was in New York for a while, and is just great with this kind of stuff, both career-wise and also personally. And it really just captures this idea that, like, people who've been in New York City for a really long time, either their whole lives or for most of it, love it, but they've also had to experience the changes that the city is, like, always going through, and they're not always positive, they're not always negative, but I wanted to give the opportunity for New Yorkers to talk about their city through the lens of how it's changed, mm-hmm. and kind of ask them and allow them to evaluate those changes and how it's affected their personal lives.
We've conducted a couple of interviews in the mm-hmm. series so far, so why don't you speak a little bit to what the process has been like as an interviewer and the people we spoke to?
First of all, interviewing people, especially about New York City, is one of the most fun things I've ever done. One of my biggest goals with this podcast, besides just kind of giving this lens of the city, is allowing for, like, a really diverse set of voices that doesn't always get the platform to talk about things and, like, how it's affecting mm-hmm. their personal life. We've been able to book people that are from, like, so many cross-sections of life, which has been really cool. So we've done two so far, which have both been amazing. Mm-hmm. The first, which I can't wait for you guys to hear, is one of my great friends, Ruth, who we met while teaching, and she is born and raised in Crown Heights and Canarsie, Brooklyn, and she's just, like, an awesome, super smart person, and you're going to hear her talk about gentrification in Central Brooklyn and, like, its effect on the minority populations here. And we get so much into, like, larger conversations about, like, how this is reflected in pop culture and things like that.
Which is really the goal of,
yeah,
like, what we're doing. And
exactly.
Hearing different perspectives.
And it's cool because, like, sitting down with her, like, she and I have been friends for 7 years. So it's, like, sitting down, like, we're chatting, we're having this conversation. And then our second interview guest, also super fun, mm-hmm. New York City cab driver, mm-hmm. which was really cool. But also then, like, planning a set of questions that gets to... Because I think what's interesting about him that's different from Ruth is that his perspective of the city is not only from living here, but his entire job is interacting with the
sure.
city every day.
Yeah.
So I think, like, thinking about how to plan the questions to get to that was really cool. And he's, like, also a really fun guy and, like, gives so many takes on, like, what he sees through his driver's seat. Yeah, and I think all of the guests that we have coming up and also the guests that we've already interviewed, no two people are the same, either demographically, career-wise. It's awesome.
How did you get in life to Like, walk us through what brought you to creating this series.
That's such a great question. It's, like, almost sort of existential, but, like, we'll get to the specifics. I'm sitting here being like, how did I get here?
Paint us a picture. How did you end up in my living room?
Yeah. So I think I'll start post, like, college. So I have spent the last 6 to 7 years teaching and in school leadership in charter schools in both Newark, New Jersey and New York. I graduated from the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia, which is in an outer borough of New York.
Outer, state line. Flight.
cultural differences. But I knew, like, immediately that I wanted to come back to New York City. And I had somewhat of a, like, idea that I wanted to teach, because I have passion and interest in education reform, and obviously there's so many things we can say about the American education system, won't get into that, but I got this job in Newark that was essentially an AmeriCorps fellowship that would pay for my housing and, like, get me to the city. Newark is actually where my mom is from, so that was special to me. So I taught in Newark for 4 years, then came to Brooklyn and have been teaching, doing school leadership here. In the past couple of years, I've kind of thought about, like, where I want to take myself. And one thing that's always been a passion for me is storytelling, whether through writing, through witnessing storytelling in, like, movies and film and music. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be able to, like, tell the stories of people that don't always get their stories told. So I've been doing blogging on my website, little plug, hottakes.com. Woo. And this podcast is just, like, kind of a way for me to access storytelling in a way, and, like, the audio medium, and obviously podcasting is awesome, so we're trying to break in.
So what is the connection, do you think, between your former career of teaching and, like, is there a connection, and how did that lead you to this?
So I think, like, if you can be a teacher and be successful at it, you can literally do anything.
Especially middle school.
I mean, I love teaching middle school. I actually would not want to teach another grade level, which surprises a lot of people. But teaching is hard for a lot of reasons, but it's not hard for the reasons that people want to say that it's hard.
Expand on that.
So Duray McKesson, you know him. If for those of you that don't know, like, look him up immediately because he's incredible. But he is one of the most vocal and public leaders in all of the Black Lives Matter movement, who was a teacher in Baltimore for a long time and has ran for mayor in Baltimore and clearly has some political aspirations. But he had an interview recently on Phoebe Robinson's podcast, So Many White Guys, which is so good. And he was like, people expect teaching to be hard, but they expect it to be hard because, like, the kids are, like, hoodlums and, like, you can't rein them in and they don't want to learn. But that was never my experience. The kids are amazing, and there are some situations where kids have been given great opportunities and some situations where they haven't. And there are times where kids did things that were difficult, but it was always, like, being a product of, like, an environment that didn't allow them to be their best selves. But teaching is hard because, one, you're doing a million different things at once and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's a political pressure cooker. And I almost feel like what people are able to do media-wise gives more voice to, like, what's happening in places like schools and places that don't always get the truth of what's happening there exposed. So I wanted to kind of feel the connection between, like, how do we actually tell the stories that deserve to be told that people would rather ignore?
Why is New York the focus of this series and these interviews?
New York.
Since I'm from California and everyone knows
New
that
New York. So I grew up in the tri-state area.
What are your credentials?
What are my New York credentials? I'm currently pulling out my wallet.
Thank
yeah.
you.
So I grew up mostly in Connecticut, spent most weekends in New Jersey. Originally, I'm from New Jersey. My mom is from Newark. She's an Italian woman from Newark. She and her family left after the riots in the 60s in 1967 and have been in, like, North Jersey since. And then my dad is originally from New York. He was born and, like, lived in Greenwich Village in an apartment for a while. My grandfather and his father owns a now defunct department store called Mayhoff's. Fun fact. And moved to Connecticut after that. And then we ended up moving to Connecticut when my sister and I were really young, because my dad had two kids from his previous marriage that lived in Connecticut. So we moved there to be closer to them. So I just grew up only thinking that the tri-state area was like the only thing that really existed. We didn't travel a lot as the kids because like we didn't always have a lot of money to, and like that just wasn't something my parents were super interested in, and they worked a lot. So I really just like revolved my life around New York City, and I have the Italians on one side and my dad's Jewish. So it's like we were living within this cultural cyclone basically. And then for multiple reasons, like I just never wanted to be home. And I was like, I know that New York is where I want to be, and like that's my end goal. So I spent almost all of my summers when I started making money as a waitress when I was like 15, mm-hmm. going into the city and spending most of my days here and just like learning it on my own. And this was like pre-iPhone, pre-GPS, just like walking the city. And my boyfriend at the time would come in from New Jersey and we'd like meet at Penn Station and Grand Central and we'd just like walk around and stuff.
Both very romantic places.
Oh yeah, there was literally nothing romantic about our entire relationship. Think about like two 16-year-olds just like walking around the city like yelling at each other. That's what this was. But it was yeah. So then I went to Georgia for like a quick reprieve, and then actually went to the Fashion Institute on 27th Street between 7th and 8th for a year, and got an associate's degree there. And I just always knew that this was the end goal, because it's really the place where I feel the most at home. Like, this is my home at this point. I really have not visited Connecticut since I was 17, but like this is my home, and I believe so much in this city and the people that are in it.
Why do you love it so much?
I just feel like you don't have to leave if you don't want to. And this sounds very much like, there was an episode of Sex and the City. Do you remember? You know what I'm talking about?
I can't believe you're bringing up Sex and the City.
I can't.
In our first episode.
I can't. And also, like, for two reasons, which you can't believe I'm bringing this up. One, Sex and the City had its place in the history of television, but also is super problematic for a lot of reasons. It, like, pigeonholes women into, like, four counterparts. And also, it's idealized version, every, like, young woman's idealized version of New York City. Not every, but certain types of young women. But there is an episode.
All that being said,
there is an episode called The Circus Freaks where the women date like a bunch of men who are, you're just like, what is wrong with you? And there's this man that's like, I haven't left Manhattan in 10 years, which is horrifying. But if you have to be stuck somewhere for 10 years, New York City isn't the worst place.
It's a great island to be stuck on.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm someone who gets bored really easily, as you know.
Yes, I do.
And I'm never bored here. I've never been bored here. You can just experience and access so many different things, like on so many different levels, like highbrow, lowbrow. Like I recently joined The Wing, which is like an all-women social club.
Shout out to The Wing.
Might do some recording there.
Out to The Wing and their podcast.
Yeah. I was like, thanks, ladies. Like really getting there. But then at the same time, I can like get a greasy slice of pizza and get in touch like with my roots and all those things. Mm-hmm. But like, I had a friend last week like call me and be like, oh, I have an extra ticket to see Ava DuVernay speak at the New School in an hour. Can you be there? And I was like, hell yeah. Like things like that, I don't feel like you can.
Yeah.
One, that they're not available, and two, like that the transportation and the access. And then at the same time, like every year on Labor Day, like we can walk out our door and see like the ultimate display of like Caribbean culture at the West Indian Day Parade. Mm-hmm. Like that's absolutely nonstop. And I've had the privilege of working in schools in multiple neighborhoods in New York City, in Harlem, in Brownsville, in Canarsie, and Flatbush. Every single place within a mile of each other is its own world.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a two-part question that we plan to ask all of our subjects moving forward. Mm-hmm. How have you seen New York change in your story and your experience here?
Two ways. One, the commercialization of the city. I feel like something that really struck me when I moved down south, not necessarily to Athens, Georgia. Athens is more of like its own city and town, but like Atlanta and other cities that I visited, like Houston, like those are great cities and there are awesome things there. It was much more of like brand new buildings, chain restaurants and things like that. And something that I always valued about New York is like this focus on the small business owner, this focus on personality, and people kind of stay and develop. There was also no good Italian food in Georgia. That's just a side note. But I think now, like, you walk around in certain neighborhoods, and it could be a city in literally anywhere in America. I just don't know how I feel about that. Like, I understand capitalism and in a lot of ways, like, participate in the capitalist system. But it's, like, when I I remember, like, when Barclays wasn't there, and it was, like, the Atlantic Pacific Station, not the Atlantic Barclays Station, and you walk out there now, and there's, like, the Shake Shack and the Target and things like that, and I just feel like New York is losing a lot of what really makes it great mm-hmm. at the consequence of, like, people who have lived here for a really long time and do consider it their home aren't able to access the city in the way that they deserve to be able to access it. And it's kind of become, like, neighborhoods like Williamsburg and things like that have become playgrounds for people who feel, like, no responsibility to mm-hmm. its history. And we're very willing as more privileged members of this city, and myself included in a lot of ways, to turn a blind eye that, like, people who are affected by the gentrification don't exist. And I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's right. And I think it's not making our city better, despite what people say. And Ruth says this in the first interview, like, despite what people say about, like, it being safer and things like that, but it's, like, safer at whose expense?
Yeah.
Like, who is it safer for everyone?
No.
Or is it just safer for people who look like me?
Well, yeah, and safe is one way of looking at it, but it's, like, you know, what are you safeguarding, and mm-hmm. what are you choosing that is less important mm-hmm. and therefore kind of goes by the wayside?
In a lot of ways, safe is really subjective, because it might be safer for people to, like, live in Crown Heights, but then what about people who are, like, forced to live in housing projects? Like, their life isn't safe. Mm-hmm. Or not even to that level. Like, what about, like, elderly people who no longer have services mm-hmm. and, like, things like that? And it's just this idea of safety and how people, like, praise...
Safety and convenience.
Yeah, too. And convenience. Absolutely. And I think convenience comes at an expense because it's only convenient for certain people.
Exactly. So that was a great answer, albeit a little concerning.
Yeah, it's a little sad.
It's from a
definitely sad
standpoint of concern.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of that, and this is the second part of the question, what do you hope never changes about New York?
There are so many things.
I know.
But I'm going to narrow it down to, like, two or three. One thing that I've appreciated is that both guests that we've interviewed so far and people that we've reached out to that have, like, kind of given preliminary thoughts, like, all say the people. And what I love so much about that is, like, from an outside perspective, or people who kind of feel beaten down about New York, it's just the idea that, like, New Yorkers only care about, like, making money or are rude or aggressive. And, like, I don't feel that way. Like, I feel the hustle, and I'm very much part of the hustle, but New Yorkers look out for each other in a way that's super particular. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, that in given situations, like, people are going to have my back. I also feel the friendliness, and I don't always feel like it looks like what people consider friendliness to be. Like, I'm not, like, shooting the shit with you outside my house every day and, like, plastering a smile on my face, but, like, you're going to ask me how I am, and I'm going to ask the same, and then we're going to keep going. And just, like, the diversity of perspectives and life that's here is incredible. So I'd say that's number one. I think number two, this is a place where people feel the pull and the need to create and kind of live a non-conventional life. People are committed to their passions here and, like, and now being part of this, like, gig economy or, like, this culture where I know what my end goal wants to be. And, like, I'm willing to scrape by and work a bunch of different jobs and, like, pull these projects together. And there are so many people in the city that are doing that, and so many people that I know are doing that, and just, like, the camaraderie I feel of that, I feel like doesn't exist anywhere mm-hmm. else. And that to me is, like, a really booming feeling where it's like, I might be broke sometimes, but I know I'm not the only one. And it's just, but it doesn't make, I don't feel like I'm looked in a way by certain people. Yeah. Like, it's just part of what happens here.
It's part of the culture here.
Yeah. And it's part of, like, certain elements of the culture for sure. And I don't want this to sound like, it's okay if I'm broke because blah, blah, blah. But it's, like, there is an idea that, like, I will keep grinding and I'll keep going and there'll be other people who are doing
that
too. Yeah,
I do think New York really draws in ambitious people.
Yeah.
For those of us that are not born and raised here, and that's why it's interesting to hear from those who are, because it's a different perspective entirely, but it's natural to have, you know, a number of people in your life that are just trying to make it and you know, doing whatever it takes to get there, and that's great.
I feel like the most, like, stereotypical example that people give are, like, people are trying to make it in acting or, like, in the arts, and I do know people who are trying to do that, and we actually have an upcoming interview, a little teaser, but it's great to say people be like, yeah, I'm going to keep throwing myself into auditions as much as the rejection sucks, and as much as I, like, have to bartend or I have to do all these odd jobs to get there. I don't want to give up on this dream, and like I'm committed to it, and like there's something really beautiful about that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's two. I think like New York has a really strong sense of itself, and that's what I'm afraid that the city might be losing, not to swing back into like what's negative about that's the change, okay. But it's like has a really strong sense of itself and who it is, and people who've been here for a long time like really buy into that, and I haven't found that in any other place that I've been. And the very last thing, and this, I'm going to cut it here. So this is for, this is like my March Madness bracket here. I had to like rattle off some things I wasn't going to mention. I know there's so much criticism of this, but this idea of New York being a bubble. So like in and around the election, and it was so fucking problematic for so many reasons because we were all like blindsided.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. And it was like, but we were all blindsided. It reminds me very much of that SNL skit with Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock. And they're like at an apartment on like the Upper West Side or Brooklyn somewhere. And it's like all these white people like sitting around being like, we know she's got it. And like when Hillary loses, they're just looking at, well, it's mostly Dave Chappelle the whole time. And Chris Rock walks in. He's like, these white people are surprised. And he's like, oh yeah. And they start laughing because it's like, obviously, people who've experienced depression in many different ways, in many different aspects of the city, know that it exists and aren't surprised that people would vote for someone like that. But what I appreciate, all that being said, I know that we need to let in other perspectives and being aware of it. But I love that New York is a bubble in the sense that, like, as a larger culture, accept so many different types of people nominally. Obviously, like, life is harder for in certain ways for certain people, but we aren't concerned with like what Mike Pence has to say about gay marriage. We will be a sanctuary city. Like, it does not matter to us what you think about immigration. And like in that case, I think that this bubble kind of creates this refuge, but then once this refuge exists, like how do we make this a livable space for people who come here for that refuge and for that safety?
We know you're a New Yorker, but why is this podcast necessary? Why is it relevant?
It's a really good question. This is something I've thought about, like, even before the concept of this podcast, is, like, the greatest thing about New York City are the people who live in it. And I think, like, what makes New York, New York is that it's just, like, a coexistence of people that couldn't be more different from each other. But, like, somehow we make it work and sometimes we don't. And I think there's been a huge conversation across, like, many different, like, demographic strains about gentrification and its consequences. And obviously the huge thing is that people who've been here for a long time are marginalized both financially, but for me, a huge part of it that doesn't get as much of, like, the talk
acknowledgement
space, is the culture. Like, there's so much cultural marginalization to the point where our city has become this conglomerate of kind of like nameless, faceless neighborhoods, where like Williamsburg is basically now Murray Hill. Long Island City is like, the graffiti, like Five Points graffiti is obviously gone, but you have these huge high rise buildings that could be in any city in America. Like, and people are like opting to live there. So a lot of people are coming to New York with this like standard definition of like what's cool is, and, Still Processing, which is one of my podcast inspirations, which is Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris's podcast from Pineapple Street Media, have this phrase that it's not gentrification, it's generification of space, where it's like we're living in these generic places because people who make the culture of this city, their voices are
imported.
Able.
And it's just you close your eyes, open them, and you could be anywhere.
Right. And the people of the city who make it so great are being silenced. So for me, I really want to create like an anthology of voices of like different perspectives of New York. Cause like my New York is different than your New York. My New York is different than like my neighbor's New York. Theirs is different from mine. Every single person that you see on the subway or the street experiences New York in a different way for so many different reasons, whether it's external, internal. And I wanted people to hear that. And I think like, not just, I don't want them to hear from me necessarily. I want them to hear from
one another.
Yeah, one another and the people who are living it. And I think there are definitely media outlets out there who take photographs of people who may or may not be from New York City who are on the street and they briefly interview them. But like, again, those don't feel specific to a place, that place being New York. So I want people to tell their story in which it exists in this great city that we live in. And I think this is a really great space, like in an audio setting, to be done intimately and to be done with care and to allow kind of vulnerability to flow. And I think we're going to get some really great stories from it.
The vulnerability is going to flow. The wine is going to flow.
The wine's going to flow, which is going to fuel the vulnerability.
A lot of flowing is going to happen on this.
And yeah, so we're excited to bring those stories to you. And we hope that they move you in the same way that they move us. We're on. We're recording. We're doing it.
We're doing it again.
We're doing it. We know back at it. We back. We only got on for about 15 minutes, y'all.
Thanks for listening to all of our sponsors. There are too many to even name.
They're clamoring to get on this show. Let me tell you.
The list is like you're outside a meatpacking club at 2 a.m, Alexis.
And we're the promoters. We're the gatekeepers.
We're the bouncers.
We are the bouncers.
Call us what we are.
Ooh. Do we have some stories with bouncers? But we'll keep those. We'll keep those in our back pocket.
Keep those close to the chest.
Yeah. Keep those cards close.
We don't need them anymore.
Yeah. Erin and I are going to close this with what's going to be the final segment of every show that we want to call See Something, Say Something. Which if you don't know is the MTA's like counterterrorism slogan that they love to like throw out there for us, but honestly it's just like an invitation for like snitches get stitches. But how this works is that it's a word association game, so I have to say the very first thing that comes to mind,
and normally this will be Alexis doing this as the interviewer, but in this case I am the interviewer, she is the interviewee. She will see something and she will hopefully say something.
I'll definitely say something.
It's Alexis. Just kidding, she'll definitely say something.
The challenge is like, can I say it only in one word? So Erin's gonna flip the script on me. I don't know which word she's about to ask me, so like this is all blind.
Yes.
I'm ready.
Correct. All right.
Yeah.
First word is parade.
West Indian on Eastern Parkway.
Hell yeah. Good times. LaGuardia.
Embarrassment.
Correct. There's only one word to describe that. There's only one association.
Yeah. If you say something different, you're just wrong.
Yes. Morning radio.
Oh, Mike and the Mad Dog. I'll give you a quick
10-second overview of why
you thought that. Sports Radio 66, The Fan. If you don't know the call numbers, my dad used to like drive me to school every morning, and that's what we had to listen to. The first show was Imus in the Morning. So if you don't know Don Imus, he became nationally famous after he said some like super racially charged comments about the Rutgers women's basketball team. And it was followed by Mike and the Mad Dog. That was actually like morning to afternoon show, where Mike Francesa and the Mad Dog would talk about New York sports. And now thinking back on it, like nothing they said was politically correct or like acceptable. So, but those are the sounds of my childhood. So thanks, Dad.
Okay, next one. Street food.
Disgusting.
I cannot believe you said that.
Except hot dogs. I love hot dogs. You know, I tried to be...
I don't know. I'm speechless.
Okay. I tried to be a vegetarian once for like...
What?
3 weeks when I was 13. Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah, that's a phase.
And what I broke think... it was a street hot dog.
Thank God. And how can you... Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'm moving on. I'm not going to let this get to me. Sarah Jessica Parker.
Queen. Not the queen, a queen.
Sure.
She's a queen.
Bike lanes.
Hazard.
So you're not for the environmental betterment of...
No.
New York.
Use your feet.
Such that Nordic countries and the rest of the Western world.
That's the last time you're ever allowed to say the word Nordic on this podcast.
All right.
So no, I'm not here for the
book. Add it to the list of regions Alexis is not
I don't like British culture either. I'm sorry. But I'm not sorry.
But we love all of our British fans.
We do.
Okay, moving on. Bill de Blasio.
A disappointment. Sorry, Bill.
Giuliani.
Fucking fascist.
Okay. Another
that was two words. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. Last one is going to be Subway.
Oh, my heart.
Your heart?
Yeah. I love the Subway.
Wow.
I love it. Sometimes I hate it so deeply. But, I mean, it is like layers upon layers of people in New York City. It works relatively well, even though the MTA is broke as a joke. I couldn't live without it. I'm on the subway like 4 times a day. I get so much reading done.
So earlier,
I listen to so many things.
when you said that New York is the greatest love of your life. Mm. And, you know, when you do love someone, you love them for all their faults. And there's always like something with a guy that everyone else finds repulsive, but you actually like find endearing. That is the subway.
That's so true. I like feel like when people are having like those conversations where they're griping about the subway, I just sit there quietly and I'm like, but I love
so
it.
Me every yeah, every yeah. time I text I'm you like, on my commute.
Yeah, but I'm like, yeah. I love it.
We'll end on a good
we
note.
Will. Okay.
Okay. So. So switching gears, instead of asking you to react with your word association to these very quintessential New York topics, I want to hear your New York version of some categories in pop culture, since Ooh. It all comes back to pop culture.
It does, y'all. I'm consuming all day, every day.
Okay, so you're going to have some good
so
answers
we,
for this.
We're ready for it, yeah.
Okay, so three categories. First mm-hmm. category is song.
Can I Kick It, Tribe Called Quest.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Hands down. Most, that was a quick answer.
Yeah. I mean, almost all of Tribe Called Quest's discology, if you will. I just think their music to me like is summertime in New York, mm-hmm. which is my favorite summer, my favorite season in New York City. I would say like anything from the 90s hip hop era, but like particularly that song.
Cool. Love it. Mm-hmm. Next one, movie. What's your New York movie?
I love all Spike Lee movies, even though they're not necessarily for me. But I would say He Got Game. I hope the listeners of the podcast have seen or at least heard of it. But I mean, you have Coney Island, you have Ray Allen, who was a Celtic, but we'll forgive him for that. You got Denzel Washington. You have like the complex dynamics of like high school basketball in New York City, which I was part of for a little bit as a basketball coach. So you got Lincoln High and you have all these things. And the soundtrack is great. The wardrobe is great. My second choice would be The Wackness, which is an indie film that came out probably like 5 or 6 years ago with Josh Peck, Ben Kingsley, Sir Ben Kingsley, and Mary-Kate Olsen. And Josh Peck is like a...
What a cast.
Yeah, right? A teenage jug.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Right? Oh my God, we should watch that right after this. And he is just graduated from high school and is a weed dealer and sells his weed out of like... an ice cream cart that he pushes around the city. And he just discovers hip hop and he's also in love with this girl. And it's just like summer in New York. What a time to fucking be alive, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That might be on my plans tonight.
I own it.
Clear honestly. My schedule.
Yeah. Clear the schedule.
Okay. Last one. Your New York celebrity.
Wow. Okay, so there's so many. I'm going to take it back to Celebrity Row at the Knicks game.
Nice.
Which Aaron and I recently went to a Knicks game, had great seats.
We did.
Who'd we see, Aaron?
I'd like to preface this by noting that we had great seats because I got drunk at a silent auction.
She did.
And not only bid on said seats, but then defended my territory and wouldn't let anyone else come close to outbid me.
I benefited from all of this. I paid nothing.
Yeah, it was a great decision, actually. Yeah. I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
It was great.
Who was there? Jack Nicholson was not there.
No, he was not there. We saw,
I was dying to see
we saw Fat Joe.
Next to Fat Joe was Matthew Broderick.
With Sarah Jessica Parker's son. I mean, his son.
His son as
but
well.
But also her son, more importantly.
He did not kidnap
a prince of New York because of aforementioned queen.
Ansel Adams was there.
Now, Ansel Adams is that painter who does the calendars. Ansel Elgort.
Oh, shit.
He makes like those calendars of like snow.
Oh no, they were both there. Like, you didn't notice that?
I think Ansel Adams is dead.
He was definitely up.
So anyways, like whoever's usually sitting in Celebrity Row, Spike Lee for sure. I mean, Leo's there sometimes. I wouldn't call him a consummate New Yorker, but he's
I wouldn't
not.
Either.
But if we're going back, I mean, we got Spike Lee. I mean, obviously I love Jay-Z, even though he's not affiliated with Nick's Celebrity Row. He just want to throw him out there. I love Mary J. Blige. I don't love Jerry Seinfeld, but like he is a New Yorker.
Wow, what a wait. Let's pause and think about that compliment that Alexis just gave. I don't love Jerry Seinfeld, but he is a New Yorker. Moving on.
That was classic.
Cool. I'm sure he's never gotten a compliment like that before.
Right. I actually think Jerry Seinfeld is someone who doesn't like thrive off of compliments, because if you've seen at we've watched
at least you got his name right.
And we've watched Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and every single time Jerry's like, I don't believe in happiness. So I'm like, what is happening here? So yeah, that's my list. I think there are more that I should mention. So many Yankees, so many Knicks. You see where my sports loyalties lie, but I'll cut it there because cool. We have plenty of time to get to know me.
Cool, cool. Thank you.
And that's it for the episode. If you have suggestions for new podcast guests or to get in touch, you can email us at nyilybyc@gmail.com or visit our website at newyorkilybyc.com. And obviously, we're on social media. Find us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle newyorkilybyc. Take care, and we'll see you around the city.
Basketball is like poetry in motion. Just coming down the court, you got a defender in your way, you take him to the left, you take him back to the right, and he's falling back, and you just, Jay, right in his face. And then you look at him, and then you say, what?